Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Leah Gilmore.
Of course, Leah Gilmore is the Center for Immersion Media's cultural correspondent, founder and director of Emoja Musica, an international music and human rights organization chosen by Essence magazine as one of 25 women shaping the world. Mm. Like I said, many other things, working on founding a new middle school program for kids in vocal music. And
right here in our city.
Singing blues, singing gospel, singing whatever you want to sing.
That's
everywhere.
Right. There's a whole universe of music.
Folks, in lines open here, 410-319-8888. I'm going to tell you, first what's coming up. Next couple hours for Lee and I jump into it. We're going to talk about Grand Prix and trees a little bit after the 6 o'clock hour. But then, a special treat, Dick Gregory will be joining us.
Wow.
About 20 minutes after the hour or so, and in next hour. And he'll be there with these wonderful, wonderful young people who are Watoto on the Nile, and these young elementary school girls who are taking, with their father, taking these hip-hop songs and turn them into these positive messages. They're trying to reach out. It's going to be a great conversation. All that coming up next. But now, it is Leah Gilmore.
And it's Mark Steiner.
410-319-8888. And she joins us here every month. We were talking about a bunch of things. And folks, as we unfold this conversation and ideas flow out, we want to get your ideas at 410-319-8888 and just hop into it with us, please. But when we saw each other in the green room, just as you walked in, and we've been talking about what to talk about today and the things that you've been reading and thinking about. But you walked into the studio, and I'm sitting there eating my Greek salad sandwich.
Oh, yeah. Smelling up the place. But it sure smelled good.
It was good. And we talked about where it came from and how expensive it was. But we won't talk about the name of the place. I like the place. I want to put them down. But it was very expensive.
No, because it's great.
Food's good.
I just can't buy it, but it's great.
Yeah. And I don't usually buy it because it is expensive.
Right.
So and the issue of food.
Right. And we were talking about, just recently, I guess in the last few months, I really made a concerted effort to change how I eat. I mean, those folks that know me know I am a professional cheeseburger eater. Okay. And I have the hips to show it. But, I did. I made an effort to just, clean up my food and clean up my world. And you know what came with that effort? Market bills that I cannot even tell you about. I mean, it's just really, really astounding. And so I stepped back and I looked at this and I really thought, this access to healthy food is truly a social justice issue. I drive around in the city, and there I can go miles with no supermarket, no fresh foods. People always castigating people, rightly sometimes, for shopping at Walmart. We know all of the big reasons. But like we were talking earlier, if Walmart is the only place that we can buy affordable organic foods, then we need to not just talking about it. We need to give real choices, real affordable choices.
It's true. I mean, if you go to places like Whole Foods.
Call it Whole Check.
Whole paycheck.
That's right.
Whole paycheck. That's
right.
I mean, it's so expensive to shop in places like that. A bunch of other places like that are really expensive to shop in around that, or organic stores. And people do fight against Walmart because, Walmart has a horrible record on labor,
right?
and how they treat women, and all that's absolutely true, and they're trying to bust unions to try to organize the workers, and all that's true. On the other hand, whenever we have shows about it, the people from the community around Remington who live in that neighborhood where they want to put the Walmart in Baltimore are saying, we want it. A, we want it because it's jobs.
That's right.
B,
and
we
lots
want it
of them.
Because it's the only place we can afford decent food. That's when walking distance from our house. I mean, those are real issues. So, I mean, and it's, we have these subsidies in this country that pay these huge industrial farms to do all the work they want to grow all this food and mass produce it. And it means that the healthy food becomes expensive because it becomes a little niche market as opposed to being a market for all the people.
And there's such a national and international campaign for everyone to change their health choices for obvious reasons. But if you don't make it accessibility, it's all for naught.
Right.
Make it accessible, rather. It's all for naught. It is unbelievable. I went into Whole Foods the other day, and we did just call them out, didn't we?
We did.
It's a great supermarket, but, it's that Whole Check thing. And I bought less than half a bag of groceries, and it was over $50. I bought six items. And this is phenomenal to me. And if I'm a parent, I have three kids, I'm working class, I'm working day to day, and I can go and get something from a dollar menu, and I can feed all my kids for under $15 dinner with all kind of choices, you know, not always healthy choices, sometimes I'm going to make that decision. Now, if we had fast food chains that we've talked about this on the infamous Facebook, if we had fast food choices that had healthy alternatives, you know, how about a dollar menu with some hummus, you know, right. Hummus and pita or those different type of choices. But that's not something that we have. And it's unfortunate. It's a we're blaming the victim type of situation going on.
Valerie sent me an article out this morning that was put out by the Union of Concerned Scientists, which is a really interesting group that talks about all kinds of things in terms of our science world. But the article's called Farmers Markets Could Generate Tens of Thousands of New Jobs with Modest Federal Support, a new report finds. So if our government would start supporting farmers markets, local small farms,
mm-hmm.
turning empty lots in Baltimore into places where young people can farm, like Denzel Washington, who has this five seeds farm.
Right.
Denzel Mitchell, he has this incredible farm that he runs, raises all this on the little street corner, and he may be about to expand that as an urban farm. But if we had those urban farms over and over again in the city, we'd be employing people would be eating healthy food, mm-hmm. be in their neighborhoods. I had this fantasy. I said, suppose you had urban farms all over Baltimore. And you got the Arabers, instead of hawking their industrial food, to be the ones who take the food around to people's homes, since there are no supermarkets.
You have a model there, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I think that is an excellent idea. And I first thought you said Denzel Washington.
I did. But
so I was on my way down to the nearest Baltimore area farm as soon as I finish here. No, just kidding. In all sincerity and honestly. It really is an important thing to do. And fresh food should be accessible to everyone. Why are we living in a society where we cannot get fresh foods, where we have to get on a bus, take a long trip, expend money for transportation to get there, take two or three buses, and then once we get there, use our whole paycheck to pay for it, and then come back? I mean, this is really a question of social justice, I believe.
We live in a land of food deserts. When mm-hmm. we have had candidates on here from I think it's the 9th Councilmatic District, one of the things that we talked about was the whole idea that whole west side of town, it is a food desert. There are no grocery stores, no place where people go shop and buy decent, inexpensive food to walk home or get home easily with bags of groceries. You know, I see when I go up to like Wegmans, you see lots of people taking the train
right.
up to Wegmans to get good food to take back to the city.
I've seen that as well. That's right. But then you got to get to the train. Then you have to. Wegmans is a bit more accessible than Whole Foods as far as prices.
Oh, yeah. Price-wise.
You know, definitely. And they have a bit more choices. But it's still so far out of the city and so far out of the area. I mean, I do think that city residents of all city residents, you know, no matter what your economic situation, deserve to have those same type of supermarkets and that type of accessibility.
I mean, folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. Let you hear your thoughts on this and whatever else is on your mind, 410-319-8888. And, you know, I was thinking that all the other things we've been talking about, in ways they're all connected. You might have heard the conversation we had mm-hmm. the other day with Mary Pat Clark, Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, talking about post offices and what's being proposed to be closed in Baltimore, in the Baltimore area. Every one of those post offices they want to close are in black or poor working class communities. That's where they want to close post offices.
It really feels like to me some type of silent war against those who are in a particular economic situation. Folks in poverty are getting beat down even more. You know what? This blew my mind, Mark. According to Mother Jones, a huge share of the nation's economic growth over the past 30 years has gone to the top 0.01% who now make an average of $27 million per household. Now, the average income for the bottom 90% of us is $31,244. And we wonder where all the discontent is coming from.
And our poverty line in America is $21,400. Did I have that right? For a family of four?
Right.
Now, I mean, you need to up that by 150% to like $32,000, $35,000
for a family of four. That's completely unrealistic. That's completely unrealistic. Yet we get caught up in these debates about the debt ceiling, and which are real debates and have real implications, all the while losing what poverty is doing to us as a nation, what joblessness and how joblessness is affecting the African-American community is unbelievable. And it is so entrenched. And we, these are the things that we need to be addressing. But, you know, when the mainstream press gets allowed to dictate what is important, this is what we get. You know what Mitch McConnell, my buddy Mitch.
You mean Senator Mitch McConnell?
Yes.
The Republican Senator, from Kentucky?
There you go.
Yes, yes.
He said, this is what always strikes me. You know, it's never been about job creation, the economy, helping the environment, you know, creating stability in the financial markets or making sure that Wall Street never melts down again. He said his top priority, this is him saying, it is about making Obama a one-term president. That was his top priority, according to him, in a quote.
Oh, that is his top priority.
So when we get bogged down in these ideological fights, it is not, it is about making Obama a one-term president.
Though I will say, though, you and I may disagree a little bit. May mm-hmm. not. We'll see. I mean,
that's what we do.
I think that President Obama is helping out in making himself a one-term president. I think he's not helping his own situation the way he's managing the affairs of the White House. He's not proving himself.
Well, I think it's not. I think it's not either or. You know, I think it's both happening. I think what's really interesting, though, is that the same type of chutzpah. Let me get that right. And you could say that, and I'll say the other words.
Okay.
The same type of chutzpah that the Republicans have shown in being okay with holding the country hostage. And be, you know, it's the same type of chutzpah we must show that we're not going to tolerate this. And that is not always seen from the other side.
We have a lot of folks calling in. Let's see what they got to think about any of the things we've just been throwing out here. The connections,
wonderful.
The no connections. 410-319-8888 is the number. Leah Gilmore is in the house. She's the culture correspondent here for the Center for Emerging Media that produces the Mark Steiner Show. One of the world's great singers who's become a diva across Europe. If her singing is true.
Your check's in the mail, babe.
Founder and director of Umoja Musica, creating a new program here in town for our middle school kids to learn singing.
Right.
410-319-8888 is the number. And Peggy, you're on the air.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi.
Hi, Peggy. Welcome.
Hey there.
Thank you. I just wanted to say your comments about the food desert is really very topical. And I just wanted to put a plug in for the Waverly Farmers Market on 32nd.
Yes.
I was just there on Saturday. It's excellent.
Yes. Every Saturday, all year round, fabulous, fabulous food. And it is a model in terms of diversity and just the whole wealth of what they have available there. And so thanks for bringing it up.
Thank you.
Oh, no, glad you called
that
in.
That is an excellent example, you know, because that is, it's in the city, and it's in walking distance to a lot of folks. And if we could have just that, you know, replicated in other areas.
Well, you know, and they're beginning to do that. I mean, mm-hmm. there are farmers markets in Druid Hill Park now every Wednesday, and every Friday at the corner, which I've been down several Fridays because Valerie's been working there with Denzel's farm, Five Seeds Farm, which is incredible. He's an incredible farmer. This
Good
guy.
For him.
This guy grew up in a black farming family in Oklahoma. He and his wife and five kids moved to Baltimore. Just amazing. He's teaching kids mm-hmm. in the public schools about how to farm and cook. At any rate, at Landvale and Charles, there is the Landvale Farmers Market every Friday from 4:30 to 8 o'clock. So it's right there within walking distance of people's neighborhoods. It's right by the train station. I mean, the great farms from all over selling great food.
You know, that's great. I think people should know more about that. There should be a listing somewhere. I'm sure there is, you know, maybe the Baltimore Tourism of some sort where all Baltimore farmers markets, and, you know, and fresh markets are listed.
I agree.
Yeah. Why don't you do that, Mark Steiner?
We can put them on the website. We can do that.
Your producers are killing me right now. No, she didn't.
Just called me out. 410-319-8888. Next up is it's Victor. You're on the air.
Hey Mark. How
Hi,
you doing?
Victor.
Good man. Welcome.
Mark, how you doing, Victor?
Victor Bennett.
Victor Bennett.
Brother Victor, how you doing, man? It's been a long time.
I'm doing pretty good. Listen, in response to your show today, what's going on with you right now, I just want to let you know that Mimi has raised that issue and has decided to do something about it. She has a stand at 2322 Charles Street, right next to the radio station.
Uh-huh.
Mm. And she's selling organic stuff because she knows that people in this neighborhood don't have a chance to get out and go, you know, far.
Good for
far
her.
Get it. So I just thought I'd let you know.
Thank you, brother. And the stuff that she was growing in her own garden, like the garden you all created like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for her. That's awesome. You know, when I was a little girl, I grew up here in Northwood, right where these offices are, not too far. And my dad was a North Carolinian farmer. And let me tell you, he had me out there chopping and picking and doing all kind of things that I thought maybe was a sentence of some sort. But when I look back, I'm thankful for that. I mean, I'm thankful that I gained those skills. And I think what Denzel is doing for these kids here is priceless. Because when you know how to grow your own food, I can't remember that old adage, you know, show him the fish and that kind of thing. You know what I'm
right.
talking about.
Give a man a
Some caller will come in and tell us. But when you are able to grow your own food, you really have liberated yourself. But when you are in the concrete desert, as we say, there are no areas. So definitely taking some of that green space and converting it into a farm area is an excellent idea.
And what Victor's talking about is a garden that he and Mimi started 30-some years ago in their backyard. They grew incredible stuff. Mm-hmm. And Victor and Mimi started an organic company called Really Raw Honey. And they make this.
Oh, wonderful.
And their son Franz now runs it. And Victor, it's great to hear your voice, man. I owe you a visit. He just moved back to the States from Panama, so he's got to go see my man,
okay.
Victor. Victor, thanks
get
a lot.
Get some honey.
And Victor's good. Victor used to be the William Counselor's chief investigator in New York City.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Bet you love it.
Good man. 410. Good to hear from you, Victor. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Chris, in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How you doing this evening?
Hi,
well,
Chris.
Welcome.
Hi.
The first comment I'd like to make, if I could, would be on last night's program.
All right, I'm going to stay on hold.
You and I had a short conversation one time up there at Essex Community College.
Uh-huh.
Essex campus. And you were wanting to know my reflections on Malcolm X. And I thought about how he ever came to my attention, and this would have to do with last night's program. I believe I really loved Muhammad Ali back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I believe it was through Muhammad Ali that Malcolm X came to my attention.
Okay.
And that was just a comment I'd like to make on last night's program.
Right.
But as far as the food's concerned, I read an article, and this has probably been a year ago. This was in Mother Jones. And issue was concerning food, and they were talking about organic food. And they were saying that because of regulations passed by Congress, the standards for what constitutes organic food is constantly being lowered. And it's mainly, I believe, so that the a lot of these markets...
Chris, I don't know what happened. We seem to have lost you. Let's see if we can... the whole question of organic food... I'm not one of those purists who worries about whether
that's
it's completely organic.
That's right.
But
I think we know what healthy is.
Yes.
You know, we've kind of cleared that up in this country. Luckily, there have definitely been some good campaigns that have defined that. And, you know, not having meat without antibiotics or, you know, not you don't need to have box macaroni and cheese that's completely processed. So Trader Joe's shows that. You know, which is an accessible place, but Trader Joe's is never in the urban area.
No, it's in Towson in a shopping mall.
Right. Under the shopping mall.
Under the shopping mall.
Which I go to daily.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but that's the luxury of having a car. But Trader Joe's needs to be, you know, within an urban area.
It does. I mean, and those kind of stores need to be in an urban area. And I think we have to expand our ability to get food and accessible food to people,
right.
Which we can do through farmers markets, growing it here, and changing the whole food system in America. I mean, one of the things we're going to be looking at, by the way, over the next year is the food system in America.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing a year-long study for that with the Tom Creek Foundation on this show and on the Eastern Shore.
Which is mind-boggling. When you think about how amazingly corporate it is. You know, we think about the farmers bending over, doing their work, they're coming to fresh markets in a town near you. But it is an extremely corporate operation going on with the farming in the States and in Europe, by the way. But I, when we think about all these things, Mark, I just sit and I wonder, when is everybody just going to be so PO'd about the situations that we're in? You know,
right.
Look at the economic discontent around the world. You know, look at London. You know, look at London. Look what's happening there now. You know, this rioting was definitely precipitated by the killing of Mark Dugan by the police. He was a gentleman who was shot, and the people don't think it was a just shooting. But look, this has been brewing underneath for years and years and years. Just in this past late June, half of the public schools in Britain were closed, you know, by massive protests over public pension cuts.
Right. Because they wanted to cut the money to the school systems, and they wanted to cut the money, the ability of these kids graduating school to go to college.
Exactly.
And so the high school kids started erupting everywhere, saying, what are you talking about, taking away our right to go to college?
It was a massive protest. I was over there around that time, and over 750,000 people were out on the streets protesting nonviolently. Hardly a headline. That deserved headlines as well.
You're talking about here in America or there?
I'm talking about London. I'm talking about in London now. I mean, over just close to 1 million people out there because they are dealing with, again, a conservative government, you know, because they're under a lot of spindle cuts to social programs. It's the same formula which happening all over the world. In Israel, the massive protests that are happening in Israel as well. I mean, 250,000 people just took to the streets in Tel Aviv. On Saturday, right?
300,000 people protesting Israel, a nation of 7 million people.
There you go.
Palestinian Israelis and Jewish Israelis all together.
Together, because economic distress should be a unifier. But if we can get people to believe that it's in their best interests for corporations to make more money than any god that has ever existed, then it's better for those corporations to continue to do that, to divide those who are suffering the most. I mean, it's some wiki wacky doodle voodoo. I mean, that's an insult to voodoo. I'm sorry, voodoo is an insult that, you know, so many of us vote against our best interests.
See, we get some calls back in here. Okay. Jump? No? All right, folks, hold on. If you're calling in, call in 410-319-8888. As soon as we get these things back on the screen, we're going to get you all back on the air with us. So do not fear. All you calling, we want you in this conversation, and we'll get you on the air with us. I think that's right. I'm curious about what do you think it'll take in America to do the same thing, whether it's about food or education system. I mean, when you see the power, let's say, of the Tea Party caucus, the Tea Partiers, who were funded, let's not make a mistake here. Tell the truth now.
That's right.
People in Tea Party, yes, they were angry because we gave all this money to the banks. But that's not the real story.
No, it's not.
The real story is that this is part of a very much larger agenda by the Koch brothers and some other billionaires who funded and fueled this and got it flowing to elect people to office in America and change the course of America. And they're doing it. And they're doing it because, I mean, you remember when the health meetings took place in America?
Mm-hmm.
And Obama's health care plan was being debated around the country. And I'm not a big fan of the president's health care plan, which I basically think
is
a Massachusetts Republican plan. But that's another issue.
Mm-hmm. It is. We should definitely talk about that one.
All that notwithstanding.
All right.
What it just took was the organization of a few raucous people in every legislative district to stand up in meetings and fight it, calling them death panels.
Right.
Because you wanted to save money and change Medicare. There were no death panels, but it changed the nature of the debate. And
they were also wickedly and amazingly funded in that process. I mean, these grassroots folks, they make the Tea Party out to be a very grassroots organization, which it did start as. But Americans for Prosperity, which is part of the Tea Party, was funded by the Koch brothers, these billionaires who have had an agenda for a very long time. And when you get discontent from people, that's when a movement happens. And that movement has happened. I mean, there are the 53%ers that we were talking about, the people,
57.
White people, the 57% of the white folks who did not vote for Obama. Not all of them. Some of them were just pissed off, PO'd. I probably can't say that. but look how it's all connected. You know, Standard & Poor's, which we've heard so much about, is owned by McGraw-Hill. And Harold McGraw-Hill III is the current CEO. He worked for George Bush. He worked for H.W. Bush. And he worked for W. He worked for Cheney, Giuliani, and is currently working for Romney in 2012. This is the owner of Standard & Poor's who just dropped the AAA rating of the United States.
You know?
So there are definite, but these things are not reported. These are not conspiracy theories. These are facts.
Right.
You know, and right. All of this is so connected. And any group of people who is willing to destroy a country at a certain level, economic level, to get your ideological stuff through is very scary and very dangerous.
We're here, 410-319-8888, here on the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I want to remind you as we go back here to the phones, hopefully get some callers in, that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. Lee and I are going to take a very short break and come right back here on the Mark Steiner Show. So please, don't go away and stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Leah Gilmore.
And we're going to try this phone thing again.
There you go.
I think the magic of Zach has maybe made it come back to work at 410-319-8888. So if you have called in and tried, could not get through, please join us again. I know Hank and a bunch of others are trying to get through. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get you back. I haven't heard Hank the Hack Man in a long time. So call back, 410-319-8888. And we'll see if we get these right. And Paul in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hey, Paul, you there?
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Speak up a little bit. I can't hear you.
Yeah, connection's not good on this side either.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Paul. We got you.
All right, good. Leah, this is the mess I'm supposed to say. You and I are both fabulous.
Hey, you. Right. I thought that was that voice, that wonderful voice.
Anyway, I heard you talking about the strikes in London, mm-hmm. and I was over in Barcelona this past October, and the whole 29th of September, actually, they had the nation Europe-wide strike. And we were there, and we saw like tens of thousands of people coming on the street just, you know, very peacefully protesting about, you know, the government taking away their benefits, but yet still keeping their pay and everything.
Right.
And they were, of course, they were mad. And, of course, but it was just, I felt more patriotism with people marching there than I ever felt with, you know, people getting upset and marching here, except from the 60s. Lately, I haven't felt that way. I felt like the real energy of their anger there than haven't felt here since the 60s.
Right. And there's such a cultural history, Paul, of protest in Europe. I've been to a few myself, you know, especially in France and in Belgium and the Netherlands. You know, there's this whole revolutionary spirit that happens. And I really feel that it is getting to a point where we are getting so pushed and downtrodden by a very small percentage of extremely wealthy persons and families that there's going to take some type of mass effort in order to get our voices heard.
Exactly.
And you know, what Paul was saying, it's good to hear your voice too, Paul, in the mm-hmm. air here with us, that what's been happening across the globe is really interesting to watch because a lot of it is beyond somebody's political belief.
Exactly.
If you look at what's going on in Israel, if you look at what's going on happening in Cairo, if you look at what's been going on in Barcelona, this is not just people who consider themselves liberal and left who are standing out. It's the entire country going, enough is enough.
That's exactly it. And that's what we need here. You know what it is? The unification that's happening around the whole with the global unrest is the universal economic uncertainty. Even in China, there have been massive demonstrations. Over 1,000 cab drivers showed up on one of the larger capitals. Even in a country such as that, there has been so much demonstration around just feeling so economically challenged. In Spain, as Paul was saying, in Portugal, in Greece, in Israel, just all over, in the UK, just all over the world, people are really starting to gather and say, we cannot live like this anymore with this uncertainty. And we are under the same type of environment here.
I mean, we have come to a place, I think, well, let's go back to the phones here, see what people are thinking. As soon as I get the names up there, I'll do that. 410-319-8888. Let me know who's on line three and I'll get them on the air. 410-319-8888.
You know what Mark said, but Martin Luther King said something really interesting. He said, we quote him so much, but this was profound to me. He said, a riot is the language of the unheard. He said, when you cut facilities, jobs, abuse power, discriminate, drive people into deeper poverty, and shoot people dead whilst refusing to provide answers or justice, the people will rise up and express their anger and frustration if you refuse their cries. A riot is the language of uncertainty and of the unheard.
And it is.
And there you go.
And that happens. That's what's happened in London now. And people are decrying the violence. But it is the anger of a lot of unemployed right. young people that is surging. And the racism inside of Britain.
Right.
That
Entrenched and deep, you know.
But these riots that took place in England were not just Afro-Caribbean Brits.
No.
These were white people, too, who were
of course.
Raising their
That's the
riots.
Beauty of the television and the web, where you can see what the faces of the people look like, you know, who are doing this.
Let's go to the phones and see how they're going. 410-319-8888.
Keep our fingers crossed.
Mimi, you're on the air. Mimi, you're on the air.
Hi. So,
hi, Mimi.
I was at the fruit stand, and Victor pulled up and said that he was listening to you and spoke about what we're doing. And I thought I could, and I didn't get to hear your show because we're working, but I thought I could address the issue of why we're doing this, hopefully, and this meaning that we're selling certified organic vegetables and local fruits. Local in this area, from this area, on 23rd and Charles, as a pilot for people to see two things. One, that food can be in the city where there isn't any. I don't know that any place else other than the farmers market sells certified organic to the public. And the other is to show people that you can feed your family, put a roof over your head, and have a livelihood by doing something worthwhile for others. It does not cost a lot of money to start up with. We are in front of a building. We have we went and got our own produce. We have tables with our own tablecloths on them and our baskets from home.
Mm-hmm.
But we have excellent produce. One Straw Farm, which probably is the only one like it in the entire area. So that's it. If there's a mission in it, it's two things. For people to see that, you know, this it can be different from what it is without doing anything other than putting in the effort and having a ball. And children have come by and they wanted free things. And we said, well, you know, whatever, this costs this. And then a guy said, I have 50 cents. And then he said, I have 70 cents. And they all shared. And we gave them children's prices, and their kids from the neighborhood, and they actually paid for it, and it's great. And
it's
then
wonderful.
The ambulance drivers from the Future Care that come here regularly on their trip yesterday, they came by after they, you know, worked with the patient out of the ambulance,
mm-hmm.
and they purchased, and they come on a regular basis. So it's just like that. We have no idea where it's going to go.
Well, Mimi, you've always been doing these things. I'm happy to see you doing this. You know, I think that, I mean, there are a lot of farms out there who do this. I mean, besides that one straw. I mean, there's Five Seeds Farm here in Baltimore. There's Calvert gives out in Sparks to do it. There's the Eastern Shore Farm, that incredible organic farm, and there's a bunch of them everywhere who kind of bring food in. But the question is, the issue is the only way that masses of people are going to be able to afford decent food is when it becomes produced by small farmers on a mass scale, that and you end the subsidies to large industrial farms. Otherwise, it's never really going to happen. I mean, the reason people can have a chicken and can eat chicken when they want it, people, I mean, everybody's going to be a vegetarian. People who want to eat chicken. Mm-hmm. And the reason that places like Tyson and Purdue do what they do is because they, before they came about in the 40s and 30s, chicken was too expensive for people to eat. Then they mass-produced chicken, and it became inexpensive for people to eat. We've got to create a system where healthy food is produced on a large scale.
Exactly.
So people can actually eat it. And, and if you want it to be sustainable and local, you have to devise a system locally where people can actually eat and sustain, where you can grow sustainable food that can actually feed people on a large level.
And the injustice implied in there is that I am so very supportive of growing your own food. But because I live in a certain area, I should not have to only be able to get fresh food if I grow it. Because that's not what the surrounding folks around me are getting. That, you know, they you can go to a supermarket and you have accessibility to fresh food, and I can only get it unless I grow it myself. It should be a choice across the board, with the ultimate supreme being growing it yourself across the board.
Right. All right. Mimi, thanks for calling. 410-319-8888. Hank, you're on the air. Hi, Hank, you there? Hank, you're on
Hi,
the air.
Hank.
Hey, Mark, can you hear me?
We can.
All right, I'm a little chopped up, so I don't know if you hear me.
Oh, we hear you.
Right. How about if some of these drug dealers weren't really dipping in front of drugs anymore? They can try to co-op and buy a couple of these markets if not want it, right? Invest your money smartly. I mean, you already got the education, count beans, right? Why don't you count the beans that really count, the ones that will feed your family? The ones that will feed others' fans, right? It's just simple concept, right?
I mean, that's
a little bit like money laundering.
I like the idea. I mean, yeah, you know, me when you think about it, if you take a step back, we did a show recently, Hank, that honored the memory of Little Willie Adams. Now, Little Willie Adams wasn't a drug dealer, but Willie Adams ran the numbers market in the black neighborhoods for 20, 30 years in this town. Made millions of dollars.
Along with really many other nationalities.
Every nationality had their own. Every
group
had their own. And the Jews had theirs, and the Greeks had theirs, the Italians had theirs.
But all in the black neighborhood.
No, not all in the black neighborhood. No, they had them all over the city. And Hamden had theirs. But what Willie did was he took all that illegal money and made it legal by investing in creating Park Sausage and all the other companies he helped create with that money. And what you're suggesting, Hank, is that people should do the same thing.
Right.
Get people out of the illegal drug trade, have them put the money they made into things that are positive
doing
for people.
Doing the right thing, yeah.
I mean, I think it's an idea. Look, I wouldn't throw that idea out. Maybe you all think I'm crazy. 410-319-8888. I mean, you know.
Did you hear the cricket? So my
right. I mean, Hank, as he would say on the air, he has a man who's, you know, done time and been out and takes care of his family and works hard.
Good for Hank. Good for
he
him.
And his wife come in here to help the WEA fund drives. And, you know, I mean, that's not an idea. I wouldn't just toss the idea out. I mean, a lot of these young drug slingers are really entrepreneurs. This is where they're making the money, and they can be turned around to do something different.
Well, you have to have options first.
Yes.
And you have to know you have options. So there's a lot of back work don't need to be done before that even happens.
Yes.
You know.
But?
I want to move on.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And Aaron, you're on the air. Hi, Aaron, you're on the air.
Aaron?
Aaron, you there? All right. Hold on, if we can go back to Aaron, we will, if he stays online.
410-319-8888. We'll try not to take it personally, right?
410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us, and we'll try to get you all on the air with us here. Aaliyah Gilmore here with Mark Steiner on The Mark Steiner Show. It's every month she comes here to pay a visit to create these discussions. 410-319-8888. And we'll get to your calls, hopefully, here in a few minutes. 410-319-8888. But I think there is something to this thought about the power of capital and what it's done to change the nature of the conversation in America
right.
and in the world.
Right. Right. And I think it happens so slowly and so insidiously that we don't even really understand or see that capital is driving so much. Nor have we seen the immense polarization of wealth that is happening.
Right.
It is mind-boggling. To me, that within itself is, you know, I hear Gil Scott-Heron in my head all day long. And, you know, it's time for some type of revolution.
You
know? Oh, yeah, don't get me started. But I'm a big proponent of nonviolence and peace studies, you know. And I think that the most powerful way to revolt is to just not take it anymore, period. I don't need a gun to do that. But that's another show, right?
No, no, you don't need a gun to
do
that.
No, you don't. But what you do need is like when King was talking about the Poor People's Campaign and what is happening in Israel and what is happening in Syria and these other countries where it is defying who the traditional people are who get together. But when you have a common place, that economic suffering, that the strength comes in getting together unlike groups.
Right.
You know, and this is why it just boggles my mind that these folks from the Tea Party, many of them who are from the most distressed states and in the most distressed situations, are the loudest proponents to tell Exxon and General Electric, Exxon, who makes profits, unlike the history of profits. Seriously, you know, every quarter they break some profit margin. And they don't want to tax them a little bit further so that we could get out of this immense mess. That, you know, that is a wicked mind job right there that's happening.
Well, I think that what we couldn't get him on the air today, but he's been on the air before, George Monbiot, who is this environmentalist from Britain who mm-hmm. does a lot of interesting writing. And you actually turned us on to this particular piece that he right. wrote recently. And, you know, what he's really saying is that what's taking place in America now is kind of a political coup, he writes, that a handful of billionaires have just shoved a spanner into the legislative process. And
exactly.
And it really is. I mean, we're seeing the power of that capital taking over everything. They've always been powerful in America. They've always called a lot of shots, but they've never been the sole power.
Right. And where ideology is now becoming the thing that drives who we are as a people. And anytime ideology becomes that completely politicized, you're not going to go anywhere because to all of us, we're right. You know, it's like having religious beliefs, you know, across the board. He said something really interesting to me. He said, no, what makes America look unreliable isn't just the budget math. It's our politics. And that's where our danger zone is. And please, let's not have the usual declarations that both sides are at fault. Our problems are almost entirely one-sided. Specifically, they're caused by the rise of an extremist right that is prepared to create repeated crises rather than give an inch on its demands. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think there are some definite issues with the other side as well. You know?
Oh, yes. It almost sounds one-sided to say it's not one-sided.
But you know what? You shouldn't be afraid to say. I think what happens for many of us progressives, thinkers, is that we somehow all the time have to feel that we have to give in on our views. It is important that we stand up and say that what they are doing is wrong. But we reckon, and it is not equally wrong. I don't think this is a 50-50 division of wrong going on here.
I don't know. Okay. I'm sure we'll have a lot of disagreement about that one day when we can get people in on the phone who want to join us here for that. Maybe discussion on it when you're here with some others who don't agree with us.
Oh, I'd like that.
I would like that, too. Yeah. We do that all the time here because right. I think that you can hear all sides on this radio program.
That's what's great about this radio program.
And still keep a point of view, but be respectful of other people right. coming in with different thoughts and ideas. That's how we grow. But having said that, what we're facing here is something that is really kind of could be destroying the entire nation.
Exactly.
And the world in the process. And the problem is, and this is the whole thing when I get crazy about President Barack Obama, is that the majority of Americans put him into office because they believed that there was going to be hope and a different change and change policies in Washington, D.C. I don't, actually don't think the president has offered us that, and I think that he's left himself open to this huge attack by the right. And I place part of the blame at his doorstep as much as I do their doorstep.
I don't completely agree with you. I do.
That's
believe,
why I said it. There you go. There you go.
There you go. I think to put this on, I think this president, after the 8 years of George Bush, has done made the most progressive and socially powerful. He's passed some of the most, for instance, don't ask, don't tell. You know, there was a fight around that that happened. That happened during this presidency. I think what happens is we get caught in the personality of the president. He's not a yeller. He's not a screamer. There have been some sincere disappointments I have had with this president. But what scares me most is what would come after. Because I believe that he came into a situation, and this is not an apologistic, or I think I just made up a word.
It's a good word, though.
Yeah, it's a good one. And it's very polysyllabic, so maybe I get 10 points on Scrabble or something. But it's not really that. It's just realistic. I think it is very easy for us to say everything is about Barack Obama when we look at the Congress and see how absolutely inept the Congress has been. You know what? Olympia Snowe, the Republican from Maine, just recently said, I've never seen or experienced a worse Congress after this budget debacle. Now, that being said, I think that we can be critical. We should be critical. We have to be critical of President Obama. But I also think that we need to put it in the perspective, because that does not happen often.
Well, yeah, I hear you. And I think that it is. I don't put all the blame on his doorstep. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is I think he is not – he – President Obama, I didn't expect him to be a raving progressive, but I expected him to stand up and fight, and I haven't seen it.
Well, I think what we all want, I think what we want is for him to get mad, you know, to stand up. I want him
to be able to
say
to the American people, Wall Street drove this country down, and we're going to take it on and make it better. I want him to say those things, and I think many people in America, if he said that, if he had made a push to do that and made a push to not let people be pushed out of their houses by the banks, if he had made those pushes early, I'm going to say that I think that even though I'm not a big fan of Democrats or Republicans, I would say that the Democrats would not have lost the House.
Yeah, you're saying a big thing.
I am.
Yeah, you're saying a big thing. And I think that there's an element of truth to it, but I don't think it's the truth.
Okay. 410-319-8888. Join us, folks. Russ, on the east side, you're on the air.
Hi, Russ.
Hey, Russ. Welcome.
Hi.
I'm good. Mark, I heard your guest speaking about something that's near and dear to my heart, and I can't figure out why so many people are acting in a way that's not in their own best interest.
Exactly.
And I was just doing some reading on the Civil War, and it made this very point. 90% of the Southern soldiers who fought in the Confederacy didn't own any slaves, had no interest in that whatsoever, but they fought in that war for that purpose anyway. And I don't know the answer, but I know that if you're looking at this economics of the United States, it's certainly not in the interest of any poor person to, as your guest put it, say that we should not be paying, getting money from General Motors, and not General Motors, but Exxon, in the condition that the country's in. I mean, 75% of the countries, of the corporations in this country, pay no income tax.
Right.
It's mind-boggling.
Social Security, which is not a daggone entitlement program. When you look at your pay stub, you see a FICA, Federal Insurance Contribution Act. That's your Social Security premium. You pay for that.
That's right.
And it may not be equal in terms of what you put in and what you get out, but still, it is not an entitlement program where somebody's just giving you some money.
And you know what, I'm going to tell you something.
I understand that because the government, what they've done, the politicians, the mass, these budget deficits and so forth, starting with Johnson, and my main man, signed my commission papers, but he took the Social Security money to fight Vietnam, and they have not stopped taking the Social Security money and putting it in the general fund system.
It's true.
We don't understand these things.
Right, right.
These things are right. So,
he's hitting the nail on the proverbial head.
No, so I'm really glad to hear the show, Mark. Haven't talked to you in a minute, but
it's been a bit.
I would like to hear you guys, you know, what your take is on why people would act in a way so detrimental to their own well-being.
Thank you.
But I think it's a complex reason why they are.
Well,
Go ahead, Leah. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I think we touched on, I think we really must, and this makes us so uncomfortable in this country, but there are a lot of people who are not happy with Barack Obama being elected, period, and a lot to do with, you know, race. And so when you add that to the foundation of already being economically disenfranchised, along with your own racial fears and perceptions of, you know, losing whatever power you think you may have, you're in an amazing recipe for a perfect storm of craziness, because that's what we have right now. Yeah, I think I may trademark with that.
I like that.
Perfect storm of craziness. But that's exactly what's happening. If you look at these folks, I was in Tennessee last year, right after their Tea Party left. I was in the Nashville area, their convention. And this Tea Party, the signs and the placards, you know, you always hear they're about, you know, getting economic stability. But you know what those signs were doing? They had pictures of monkeys on them, you know, effigies of
right.
Barack Obama.
Right.
This is what it was being put forth by these folks. And you cannot tell me that's about you are suffering with you because folks are getting Social Security. That's about your fears, your prejudices, your bigotry. And when you have that as a foundation and you mix it up with real economic suffering, you've got a recipe for what we're experiencing right now. It almost feels like a civil war.
Well, it is a civil war in some ways. We are in that kind of mode in America. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we are there. And I think to be conservative does not mean to be racist.
Right. Exactly.
But a lot of the opposition to Barack Obama is racist, and that's just real.
And they've co-opted. And they should. If I was the conservatives or the Republicans, I would be really upset that my government, my political party has been co-opted by racists.
And Leah, you've had the last word for today, at least on this hour.
Well, there you go.
Good to have you here. Thanks so much.
It's wonderful,
baby,
to be here with you, sweetheart.
And we will do it again soon.
You know I can't wait.
Here we go. Leah Gilmore, Center for Media's cultural correspondent, world-class singer and performer, founder of Umoja Musica, creator of a new middle school program in our community to teach kids the vocal arts and more. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
Folks, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to look at Grand Prix and trees and the debate around that, what happened. Mm-hmm. And then later on that next hour, Dick Gregory. So stay with us. We'll be right back.